Tomlin's decision, the Browns head coaching search, more on that throughout today. The Eagles have just announced that they have let offensive coordinator Kevin Petullo go, so somebody was going to have to pay the piper for Philadelphia and their early exit of the playoffs. This always felt like the obvious. Now it becomes, all right, what are the unobvious moves that they make to try and change things in Philly?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like Sirianni's gone, and they're not firing their defensive coordinator, so they're kind of out of options now.
Well, no, now it becomes, all right, does A.J. Smith come back? What do you do with, I mean, Saquon did not have the best season, even though it looked like he really
A.J. Brown is what you mean.
What did I say instead?
A.J. Smith. You comboed A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith.
That's because I just love them both together, you know? You can't part with them, a package deal.
I was like, who's this A.J. Smith guy you're talking about?
A.J. Brown would be a really interesting fix for the Browns wide receiver spot, even if I got to know who the head coach is, because A.J.'s a little... tightly wound.
Yeah. I think I saw the odds the other day. I think yesterday they had us middle of the pack. They had the Browns about middle of the pack in the NFL. And there are some obvious teams that were there. Ravens were there. Patriots were there. There's some other teams that could obviously use some pass catchers.
So we'll get to a little bit more NFL talk in about 20 minutes here. The Cavs lost an inexcusable game against Utah. And obviously everybody's panicking, and correctly so. But I mean, from what you heard from Kenny Atkinson last night to Donovan Mitchell, it just seems like everybody's saying the same thing, yet nothing's changing for the Cavaliers.
Well, and so that's like, it's hard to even have like a unique take on the Cavs right now. Like, we all across the board think that they're an underwhelming team right now. They're not playing hard on any given night. They're going through what seems like almost a championship hangover, while obviously not winning a championship.
And that divisional round hangover is just a bear.
And honestly, how they're doing this is almost as if they would have won the title last year, and this is just them sleepwalking and having that hangover that everyone talks about, but they didn't accomplish anything last year. You're not supposed to be able to have that. A 64-win season doesn't let you have this type of regular season that they've had.
So I think I do have a little bit of take here.
All right, give me a take.
I don't think this is the worst thing for the Cavs. They really haven't faced adversity since they've been together. I mean, not since they traded for Donovan Mitchell, and Donovan has been the ultimate cheat code for them. And I think if, as we were going through the playoffs last year, and obviously 2 years ago as well, both times we thought to ourselves, I don't know that they're battle-tested enough. I don't know that they've gone through enough adversity. Now, the problem is, this is half a season, and I don't know they're going to pull the nose up on it. But you've got the talent. It makes no sense to fire Kenny Atkinson. It makes no sense to make some huge trade in season unless somebody knocks your doors off for a trade for Darius or Jared or anybody else. Figure it out. Like, this is the adversity that they've been missing. Go figure it the hell out.
I know. The problem is that there's not much belief they're going to figure it out. Like, that's the hard part right now. And it seems like in the past couple of months, at certain times, it feels like they've almost pushed them to try to figure it out. Like, hey, wake up, do it. And they just haven't been able to.
Yeah.
And like, that's why, like, you hear Donovan, after all these games, sounds as frustrated as can be. He's clearly angry about how this season is going. But this doesn't feel like a, hey, snap your fingers and just get it together type thing. It's a real problem.
You know,
they're not nearly as good as they thought they were.
You know, it reminds me of Jimmy Butler in Minnesota. If you guys, it's fine if you don't remember this, but Jimmy Butler, his last year in Minnesota, Jimmy was frustrated with Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins.
When he took the mirrors off his car because he doesn't see anything in his rearview mirror. Oh, he doesn't look behind. He only looks forward in life.
I think it's when he walked into the gym.
He was losing his mind in Minnesota.
I think it's when he walked into the gym and said, I'm going to take the last four guys on the bench, and then he beat the rest of the starters.
He had like $400,000 cars legitimately taking the rearview mirrors off.
Which is funny because when he came to the NBA, he had like a crappy old pickup. That's neither here nor there. But my point is, like, that was a fracture point for Minnesota where, and I think that led to him going to Philadelphia. And then I think 6 months after that, he was in Miami. I think people want to look at this and go, well, this is a real fracture point with Darius and Jarrett. Guys, I think the next 40 some games are about, can the Cavs figure it out through this adversity? And if the answer is no, I don't think Darius and Evan are the guys going. I think the obvious fracture point is going to be with Donovan because I don't think he's going to want to stick around for a retool in a guessing game. Mm-hmm. And again, that's his prerogative. Like, he's reached to a point where if 4 years into this thing, if Darius and Evan aren't ready to compete for championships now, there's no reason if you're Donovan to believe it. So I almost look at it as it's an all or nothing. It's you guys figure it the hell out and you guys figure out what it takes to win, which isn't that hard. Like, they've got the path to winning. They've done it. This isn't about Ty Jerome not being here. It's not about the health is a little bit of a factor. This is about guys wanting to play on any given night in this weird championship hangover. And if you figure it out, great. Maybe this is the thing that you needed to get ahead in the playoffs for the first time in a minute. If it's not, there's your answer, and that probably means there's a logical parting point with Donovan. Not that I want him gone, but it just makes sense. It's easier to change Donovan out and the pieces around Darius and Evan than it is to trade Darius, Evan, and or Jarrett.
Well, and with Donovan, too, it's just Donovan's not going to opt into that final year of his contract if this is what is being put out there.
Yeah.
He just wants to win so badly. Yep. And like, and he's at a spot, I don't blame him, by the way, but he's at a spot where the narrative on him is he's never made it to a conference title game. Like, he's got to start doing things in the postseason and having long postseason runs, and he's just getting up there. He's getting too up there in age to be like, I can just wait around for the Cavs to figure it all out. He's not going to.
But this really does feel like, because I think the obvious answer is, well, do something, fix it, fire somebody, trade somebody. Or I think good organizations, and I think this is something that Kobe has done, let it play out.
Yeah, Kobe does a lot of that.
And listen, again, I think the disastrous thing is if it doesn't work out. If you either don't make it to the second round of the playoffs or you top out in the second round of the playoffs, I do think there's going to be a breakup coming. I don't enjoy that. But at some point, I do feel for Donovan. Like, Donovan deserves better than what a fair amount of his teammates are giving him on any given night. Those aren't bad guys. There's a difference between being bad guys and just not needing to win the same way.
Well, they got out-rebounded by 20 last night.
Yeah.
Rebounding in the NBA is an effort game. Like, I'm sorry, you can't get out-rebounded by 20 and then tell me you're giving it your all and you're giving it your best on any given night. And that's what fans are seeing, too. We're seeing this. I mean, the second quarter was really nice last night for the Cavs. The other three quarters was absolute garbage.
Yep.
And fans are watching that, and they're seeing it. And it's just, and this is why I describe it as like a weird championship hangover, because I know the talent's there, and I know they can snap out of it. Now, the sad reality of this, well, there's a good thing and a bad thing. The bad thing is that I'm worried that they're just not going to be able to snap out of it. And then even if they're able to, maybe we just thought they had too much, way more talent than they actually do. But the good thing is that you're in the East. And in the East, this thing is still wide open. It's not as if anybody's claimed the East. It's not as if anybody has really put their flag down and said, now all of a sudden this is our conference. Like, it's still wide open.
But this isn't, let's all be honest, they might not be, whatever, a 64, 65 win team from last year.
No, they're not.
But they're also not a 45 win team. And this team should be in the 54 to 55 win range. That's where Vegas had them at. It is fair to say that's where we should expect them to be. And listen, I think the beat here has been incredibly kind to the Cavs. I think they've almost, I don't say defended the Cavs, but certainly, oh, these aren't bad guys. And they're right. It's not about these guys being bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
But this is your answer. This is the inflection point. And it's not what I want to have happen. It's what I think is happening. And so there is a part of me that's like, don't touch a damn thing. I mean, if you can get another shooter in here or a 3-and-D player, by all means, do it. If you need to turn DeAndre Hunter, who all of a sudden his camp thinks of him as the second coming of somebody he sure as hell isn't, Larry Nance Sr. All right, if you got to get rid of him, that's fine for Rui Hachimura and Gabe Vincent.
I mean, he's been borderline unplayable lately.
But like, okay, but if like, do a small move or two. Don't you dare touch that core four.
Well, that's the thing.
Let DeAndre figure it the hell out.
DeAndre, it's a reality of this, that DeAndre was never supposed to be just a small part of this.
Yeah.
You know, like that's, and they put him in the starting lineup in the beginning part of the year. Like, he was supposed to be the thing that glued it all together. And like, that not working out, and them having to move him back to the six-man role that he had in Atlanta that worked out so much better, and it not working out still. Like, there's a couple things about this team that have just been really confusing. DeAndre Hunter absolutely sucking. Lonzo Ball, unplayable. And then the perimeter defense that is non-existent as well. Every team that comes in here, it's the best three-point percentage they've ever had. Meanwhile, we've taken a step back from an historically great offense last year to be like the 10th best offense in the NBA. Like, there's just some weird things that have happened.
So it is. And I listen, when people say Kenny's trying to play too many guys, that's what you do in the regular season. So you don't burn out Donovan and Darius and Evan and Jarrett. You're supposed to give Tyson some run, and he's actually been one of the, I think he's the only guy with a positive diff last night, by the way, is Tyson, and that's been a pretty consistent thing with him. But like, you're supposed to give Lonzo some tread to see what he's got. And by the way, Lonzo's going to come back again. You're supposed to play CPJ and all these guys. I continue to come back to, this isn't a bench issue. This is a core four issue. And I think there's a difference, again, between being these guys don't like each other and maybe these guys aren't incredibly comfortable playing together, and that those overlaps, which have been a thing that they've made good on, that they've made the best of, well, for the first time, they're not making the best of season.
Well, let's talk core four then. Donovan, I have no complaints about Donovan. Donovan's great.
Not at all.
But Evan Mobley is a fantastic defender that is a very average offensive player at this point. No. And like he hasn't taken a step forward. He just hasn't. And then Jared Allen, I've never seen Cavs fans more frustrated with Jared Allen through a stretch than what we've seen over the previous couple months. I tend to defend him more than other people, but I understand it. And Darius is far too injured. And even when he's out on the court, he's not playing at a high level at this point. And like, it's just, it sucks. No part of them have taken any sort of massive step forward. And then Donovan stayed the same great Donovan.
I don't have, and I want to make it clear, I love watching Donovan. And what he's done the last 4+ years has been so much fun. I think he is so criminally underrated. And there's a part of me that if this is the beginning of the end here, and that's what this summer becomes for the Cavs, I'll be incredibly sad. But I'll really root for that dude because of the way he's done things here in Cleveland. He is that guy like Jimmy Butler that just wants to win. That's all that guy wants. That's all he thinks about. It's all he strives for. And this would be a problem that the rest of the Cavs aren't on his level. And that is a long-term systemic problem. I also wonder, I think it's fair now 4 years in to say, is Evan ever going to be able to be the focal point of the offense with two ball dominant guards?
No, look at it. Like it's the Utah thing that Donovan already went through. It's like it's just playing back all over again. In Utah, it was him and Mike Conley Jr., and it's two undersized guards, and they tried to make that work, and it wasn't good. The only other wrinkle that's been new in this is that Evan Mobley's basically morphed into. He's a better offensive player than Rudy Gobert, but he's basically morphed into Donovan's version of Rudy Gobert. Mm-hmm. Rudy Gobert won, three straight Defensive Player of the Year awards when Donovan was there? Like, just an all-around defensive stalwart. And then offensively, just is what it is.
I can see you building a really beautiful offense.
That Utah team didn't accomplish anything.
Between Darius and Evan. I think there's always, as much as we've talked about the fit between the two guards and the two bigs, and those are the biggest fit issues, I do wonder if this can ever really truly give Evan a chance for it to be his team if Donovan's here. I don't like that I have to say that. And most chances you take the better player over the guy who might be the better player in 5 years, but this is where we are. But I'll go back to it. Guys, everything that I just said is a June problem. It is not a now problem. Figure it out. And this is a challenge to Evan, Jarrett, Donovan, and Darius. Figure it out. We're not scapegoating the coach again. All right. Hey, we just traded Lonzo Ball for Ty Jerome. Didn't we just fix the Cavs? All right. Maybe that makes DeAndre Hunter no longer bad at basketball again.
No, I think what they think is going to happen is Max Strus and Dean Wade are going to save the day. And I would tell you that's not what you want to bank on.
They're nice basketball players.
But they're not going to save the day.
And I get that the Cavs starters are playing less. They still aren't carrying their load no matter how much they play. 216-474-0092. What's wrong with the Cavs? We'll ask that of John Fanta. Get his reaction on Mike Tomlin. A week in. Who does he want as Browns coach? That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Matt got to play Ian Rappaport to John Fanta.
I mean, Jersey John, what are we doing?
Is that how that went down, Mac, or no? Is it not?
No, John was giving me a little preview. He's got some takes.
Did you break it to him that that's what was going on? Was he stuck in like an NBC meeting or anything?
He is aware.
Okay. All right. That's good.
We're going to welcome on Cleveland's own. We teasingly call him Jersey John when he makes me upset. But he's a great dude, great man. NBC Sports, John Fanta on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. John, welcome to the show, buddy.
Fellas, it's always great to be with you. And I'm gonna start this week by saying that deep down, I think that the last 3 weeks have been a positive for the Cleveland Browns and a good thing, a really good thing. And here's why. Think about all this. Number one, the Browns beat the Steelers. That will never be a negative thing. That will always make a Clevelander smile. Number two, Browns fans then proceed to watch Tyler loop out a field goal, and the Steelers end the John Harbaugh era. Number three, a week later, we all watched the Mike Tomlin era come to an embarrassing, humiliating end in Pittsburgh, and the Steelers have more problems than there's a list for. And number four, Who had Zach Taylor as the last man standing in the AFC North? Zach Taylor is still employed, which means that's good news for the Browns because I'm not scared of Zach Taylor. I'm not scared of the Bengals. So if you're the Cleveland Browns, these last 3 or 4 weeks, as much as there's mystery in the air, the other circumstantial things in your division, it's been a best case scenario.
Yeah, but you still didn't pay off your burger bet.
Yeah, but that's going to get paid. That's going to get paid off. It's in the processing. You know, it's processing there. It's like expense reports. It'll get done. It'll get done.
How long does it take to process?
Yeah, a little bit. It takes some time on the grill. But can we let that marinate for a second? Right? Like you've had the two guys that have been the big opposition to you over the years that are still pretty good coaches, and I think there's good coaches in both those guys still, and the one other coach. Who I'm not afraid of at all. I don't think Nick or JP you're afraid of either. You know, Mike Brown is cheap and still employing him.
No, it's unquestionably a great thing for the Browns, John. Like, there's no other real way to look at it. Because even though Tomlin had not been winning playoff games, hadn't won a playoff game since the Obama administration, and Harbaugh hadn't been winning them nearly at the rate that he should be with Lamar Jackson, in the regular season, they were still doing their job, and they were still winning a bunch of games, and especially against the Browns.
Well, and you never won in Pittsburgh. I mean, in the regular season.
True.
With Mike Tomlin, just think about it, Browns fans. For one, there was one game on the schedule. Like, if you went to play the schedule game, which we all are guilty of, it became a tradition of, like, yeah, just put the red L next to it and let's move on to the next game. So now, I would say the Pittsburgh Steelers have far more questions than the Cleveland Browns do to answer. And I think the Baltimore Ravens don't have as many questions. But when a guy is at the job as long as Harbaugh was, there's natural things that now you're curious about. And the stamina and durability of Lamar Jackson is very much in the air. So the point is, like, what is today officially signal? The Tomlin news officially signaled a brand new day is here in the AFC North. And I think we're all about to sit back and see, like, what the next 48, 72 hours are going to entail.
All right, John, if all things were equal and both were available right now today and you could make the hire for the Browns at head coach, would you rather Mike Tomlin or John Harbaugh?
I would go with John Harbaugh. I like the Cleveland connection that he has, number one. I do think John Harbaugh, if he had a healthier Lamar Jackson this year, you know, I go all the way back to week one when they were in Buffalo. And, you know, I think there's a modern adaptation there with Harbaugh and his staff in Baltimore. Mike Tomlin, I have an incredible amount of respect for. I just think that his DNA is very much stuck in the early 2010s. You know, if not, it felt like last night watching their offense felt like I was watching like an NFL game in 2008. Like, it just, I think he's a tremendous motivator. You know, I think that he's a wonderful coach. But I do think I'm going to take John Harbaugh because I've seen more recent success from John Harbaugh and think that he's still got the ability to not just make the playoffs, but I think he's adapted well enough over the course of his career that I think a new stop could truly see him unwrap something with his next team. So whereas with Tomlin, I just have felt the last decade, as much of a motivator as he's been, the scheme itself, and then some of their results, as great of a guy and as respected as he is, and I commend him for his career, I would pick Harbaugh over Tomlin because, to me, Tomlin's schemes are very archaic.
All right, John. Is whoever the Browns hire as the new head coach an upgrade over Stefanski?
Whoever they hire?
Yeah, I'm trying to pick your brain in two things here. Who do you think they're going to hire, and then whether or not you think that person's better?
Well, so here's my hang up on this. What makes you think that and I'm not saying you think this, but this is what I'm wrestling in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Why would an old school football guy who's been around the block a long time and, you know, doing his thing a long time. Why would he want to be controlled by Jimmy Haslam and Andrew Berry? Why would he want to have to answer to those people other than he just wants to coach football? And if that's the case, okay. I mean, I guess, but you know, it's been clear and it was more than time for Stefanski to get fired, but it's been clear that the Browns have organizational dysfunction, whether Jimmy wants to admit it or not. So I think that's where I'm like, why would Andrew Berry, what about Andrew Berry is going to be truly appetizing to an old school head coach, like coordinator who's trying to get the head job? I think they're going to do whatever they can. There's only 32 of these available. They want to get one. And there's going to come a time in this where I still think my bet is the Browns are going to either land Mike McDaniel or they're going to land a coordinator. It's kind of where my brain goes.
What are you rooting for?
But what am I rooting for?
Yeah, coordinator or McDaniel?
I'm rooting for a coordinator. Here's why. To me, I want to get somebody that is on the rise. You know, where like I look at a Jesse Minter, I look at the Kubiaks, both of them. And I think that I look at the McDonald mold in Seattle. Ben Johnson's got the Bears. The Bears just won a playoff game for the first time in 15 years. You know, I look at that mold. I look at Jacksonville. Like, I can't say a bad thing about Coach Cohen. I thought Coach Cohen coached a great game Sunday. I just think Josh Allen was the best player on the field and won the Bills that game. But I thought Jacksonville, like, they came for the fight. They took the lead twice in the fourth quarter. They just couldn't close the game. They could not get a stop on Josh Allen. We're like, I look at the landscape of the NFL, and I think it's being shown that if you go and get the right energizer and the right guy who you don't have all these years of tape and of things that you could already collect. And, you know, there are known pitfalls, like with McDaniel. At the end of the day, it bombed out. You know, if you want to blame Tua on everything, that's fine. But, like, it didn't end well. It ended very poorly in Miami. And the Browns would have to stomach that. But your original question was, whoever they hire, is that better than Stefanski? I don't know about that. Because the Browns have missed on hires. Severely missed. I mean, Freddie Kitchens was their coach. So how could we actually say definitively that the coach would be a big upgrade?
Because they did hire Stefanski. I think you got to give him. I think that's the one thing I haven't seen the national media give them credit for.
Oh,
that was a Daryl response. Oh boy,
do you want to hire Stefanski back, Nick?
No, the point is that's not what he said. The point is they haven't gotten credit for. Like, remember,
he rescinds his
6 years ago. No one was lauding the hire of Kevin Stefanski.
Good point.
And the job Kevin did got him all these accolades around the NFL, and he was given back-to-back losing years. It's not like they fired him the first opportunity they could have, which would have been
correct.
2021 after the Baker debacle, right? And they didn't fire him after the next losing year either, which was a 7-10 year. They gave him four losing seasons in 6 years, and yet none of that's out there. It's like, hey, it's not the same old Browns.
Okay, and by the way, three quick things on that. Number one, for any of the Baker people out there, you should put a paper bag over your head. I mean, it should be opened. You should still be able to breathe. But you should be ashamed of yourselves, because your arguments over the years about that have been ridiculous and clown show, because he showed his true colors as this season went down the stretch. So I don't want to hear from that group.
Wait, real quick, because now you're going to fight me. You don't think the Browns would have been in a better position the last 4 years if Baker would have been their quarterback as opposed to the schmoes we've run through here?
I'm trying to win a championship, Nick.
I'm trying to win nine games a year.
Championship Fanta, that's where we agree. John, that's where me and you agree, by the way, because I'm a championship guy. I like that.
My goal is not to be 9-8. You want to be 9-8, Nick Wilson?
John, no, I want to win. I want to be in the playoffs every single year, which I think you probably would have been.
You just said your goal is to win 9 games.
Yeah, I'm being a little bit facetious, John.
Not really. He likes Tomlin and his above 500 record all the time.
Tomlin like fan of flip-flops on everything else.
He loves Tomlin.
You drive home to Renegade on your car. No, you're going to drive home with your terrible towel waving in Renegade.
Would they have at least one more playoff win in the last 4 years with Baker as opposed to the previous schmoes?
Wait, you want me to jump in Lake Erie if they win a playoff game? Woohoo! congrats. We won a playoff game. When's the parade? I'm trying to win it all, man.
I'm loving it because that's my mentality too.
But here's
the
problem. I want to just make the playoffs.
That's
I want to win it all. The Cavaliers, they're well short
of
it.
We're in this
they're,
for the trophy case, Fanta.
John, you got one playoff win and lost all your loyalty. That's what I want to know about. I want to know where that happened.
What's that?
Said you
what
won.
Are you talking about?
I'm saying you won one playoff game with Baker and lost all your loyalty.
Because he showed who he really was. This season again.
What about the two previous years, for the love of God, John?
Where did he get them?
He won a playoff game.
Congratulations. The Browns knew they could win a playoff game with him. They tried to take their shot and go after it. But this is I don't like this. This argument is so silly because it's hindsight 2020 anyway. No, I just said those people are clowns because I think it's a ridiculous premise to like continue to say that, yes, the Browns would have been better off with Baker Mayfield, but that was three teams ago. It was three teams ago now. And he'll never make a conference championship game. The Browns felt like they had the roster to go for it. And they did, and they bombed. The move bombed.
Baker was like 4 minutes from a conference title game.
He didn't make it. He didn't make it there. So the fact is, you know, okay, you were 4 minutes away from your first kiss in the sixth grade at the movies. It did not happen. She got up and she went and got some more sour candy.
In the sixth grade at the movies?
And she called her mom and she said, I've got to go home.
Is this a real story that we're going through?
She chose sour candy over those beautiful suckers you got on you.
I've had better afternoons at Crocker Park, boys. The fact is.
But you had to pay for it.
And so has Baker, by the way. The fact is.
Parking lots are free, John.
You know,
yes, they are.
The Cheesecake Factory isn't.
Okay. I was going to stop short there.
They've
but
got
okay.
a great menu. I don't know what you're talking about.
You never step foot inside. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Okay, a redefined mac and cheese bites. Okay, Harbaugh or Tomlin? You both asked me. I was curious of who you would take. You don't have to like explain it because you're interviewing me, but I was just curious where you sided on that.
I'd take Harbaugh. Plus, at this point, Tomlin's going to cost you something, too. We don't know what that price is going to be.
Yeah, you don't want that.
Yeah, because they retain the rights. It's going to be, I mean, if Sean Payton was a first and a second round pick when he went from the Saints to the Broncos, I can't imagine what the Steelers are going to want for Tomlin.
I agree, and I just don't know how you could watch that game last night and be convinced that he's still at his best.
Well,
other side of that, and people don't blame
in the playoffs
Tomlin
with
enough.
97-year-old Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, but like and even before, you're like, oh, he said, see the list of quarterbacks that he's had? How could anybody win with this? It's like, well, shouldn't Tomlin, the GM, take some responsibility in this as well?
Agreed.
Like, he's the one that constructed this roster top to bottom.
Exactly. He had a lot of control in how things went there. And I think in his mind, he's like, I'm going to turn back the clock with Rodgers. He can throw with time. Well, how's your offensive line? I mean, the offensive line last night was really bad. And I don't know what, like, their early play calling actually looked decent. I also thought there were some openings for them from time to time in that game. I mean, the Texans were
daring them.
CJ
Stroud couldn't stop fumbling the ball.
Oh, but like, besides the fact, the Texans were daring them to take the lead a couple times with some play action, with some, you know, like the Steelers had a couple of plays, and Metcalf does make a difference. I don't know how they don't get into Freiermuth more often, but like, yeah, Stroud was horrible. If you're the Patriots, you're licking your chops after what you did to Herbert. If you're the Pats, you're thinking, we got a one-way ticket to the AFC title game. Another first-year coach that has – I know he's got a past experience. That would be the counter argument, Vrabel, you know, but Vrabel's more proven, you know, than like a Mike McDaniel.
John, we appreciate you. Good stuff. And I don't know who she is or where she is now, but I guarantee you she's not doing well as you.
You're the one that got away.
No, stop. Very, very, very pleased with how everything ended up. We'll see, gentlemen. Yeah, I've got my popcorn, fellas.
All right, John. You're suspect.
Thanks, boys.
John Fanta there, NBC Sports.
Man, I love Fanta. MILFs everywhere.
John Fanta on the Make It Right, Call Kyle Wright hotline. We'll react to what John Fant had to say in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan. When we were talking about this 3 weeks ago,
with the defense is the exception there.
They do need that. Yeah,
it's been 3 years now he hasn't been in the playoffs.
And they're going to be subtracting Trey Hendrickson.
He gets very injured, and they don't have a defense. But I agree. Like Joe Burrow, you have to count for.
But I do think what's interesting is 3 weeks ago, one of the things that we both called out was, all right, I think if Cleveland, after the Cleveland win over Pittsburgh, it was like, all right, I think Pittsburgh beating Baltimore allows the immediate carnage of Harbaugh, and then maybe after the playoff game, then Tomlin steps away. Well, this is exactly what we did want to have happen.
It worked out perfectly. Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing. There's from a Browns perspective, you can't complain about Harbaugh and Tomlin not being there, but it's mainly because they were so good in the regular season.
Yeah.
Like that's the hard part about this. Like, if you're Joe Burrow, if you're Josh Allen, if you're one of the, if you're a postseason, if you're Mahomes, you weren't scared about Harbaugh or Tomlin. They gave you no reason to be scared. Mahomes is never scared of Harbaugh or Tomlin in his entire NFL career. Even in that the AFC title game, which is the best thing Harbaugh did in the postseason with the Ravens, it wasn't as if Mahomes was the one shaking in his boots. He just waited it out and waited until Harbaugh to basically, you know, fall flat on his face in that game.
I do think that Steelers fans, so they've resigned themselves to next year's not going to be as good. Because they think at the end of it, they're going to be better 2 years from now. I don't think the Steelers really understand, or Steelers fans, I'm going to say, I think the Steelers know this, how rebuilds usually aren't a one-season thing. And it's not a guarantee that they're going to get their quarterback in 2027 anyways, because even if they're worse, I think this organization is still going to be pretty anti-tanking, no matter who the head coach is.
Right, but here's why they feel free today, Nick. They feel free because, and this is the part I emphasized with Fanta at the end of the segment that I've not spent enough time emphasizing today. Tomlin basically escapes free with the idea of criticism for Tomlin the GM. And if you're a Steelers fan, why you feel free today is that Tomlin the GM kept making all these moves towards the defensive side of the ball. Tomlin the GM kept emphasizing the defensive side of the ball, not nearly enough emphasis on the offensive side of the ball. And like as we see how today's NFL is, I mean, it's an offensive league. Tomlin thought he could win with a great defense. He put all the money there, and he did in the sense that he got over 500. But like you need an offense to win deep in the playoffs.
But you know, a year from now, if the Steelers are 6-11 next year and they've got the 11th pick, right? And that's the new head coach's record. Mike Tomlin is going to get a glow up from that in his candidacy, right?
I mean, I think Mike Tomlin will be all right either way.
But I think the perception of Mike Tomlin stepped away and look what happened, I guarantee you that's going to be a media narrative out there.
I think it's going to be looked at as there's a reason why Tomlin was stepping away. At least that's how I'll perceive it. The reason why Tomlin's not back next year is because he knows this team isn't very good next year.
I think that depth of analysis is probably not going to be something we see on the national level, but I could be wrong. By the way, I think you've called this. I think people in Pittsburgh have called this. I just think they haven't been on the wrong side of the media perception in a hot minute. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays for them because we're used to this. We're used to punch down at Cleveland, of course. It's never Kevin Stefanski's fault. It's always Cleveland's fault or the Browns' fault. We're kind of used to that. I don't think the folks in Pittsburgh are. I think they're calling for something that it's really easy when you're calling from the confines of 9-8 or better every year. I think it's really easy to say, yeah, we'll be bad for a year because it's probably going to be longer than just 1 year.
Yeah, we'll see. They want an offensive football team, and I don't blame them for that. But you're right. The national analysis sometimes doesn't go as deep as, oh, hey, the priest put holy water in the end zone. Fantastic. Now they're off to a good start. It's like there's no depth there. I get that. I understand it. But I feel like we can all kind of see where this one was going and why Tomlin stepped away.
Do you get the priest to bless the head coaching chair? Like, how do you get the priest to bless the job?
I didn't see any photos or videos of the priest doing anything before the game yesterday, by the way, against the Texans. Mm. Doesn't mean it didn't happen, but if there's video out there, it's the two things. If there's video out there and I just haven't seen it, then I guess we just have to denounce all Catholicism in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
But if there was no video because it didn't happen, ooh.
It's weird that you would
I wouldn't do that
for the regular season, but you wouldn't bless it for the postseason.
I thought this was going to kind of be like a tradition. As long as they kept winning, you'd think the priest would come out and do the holy water and put it all in the end zone and make it a whole thing. Maybe the priest was busy. Maybe he had priest duties. Maybe Pope Leo's like, I'm busy in Chicago. Don't you dare interrupt what's going on with the Bears. We're not one team gets good luck and that's it.
I did it once. I'm not doing it again. That feels very line in the sand for a... I feel like a priest would be like, no, this is my moment. I'm going to shine again. Or
maybe.
What about this?
Maybe.
What if he's not good in the postseason, just like Tomlin?
I mean, I would imagine the diocese.
What if Pittsburgh priests just are like, oh, they freeze when the playoffs come around?
I imagine they got some good tithing off of this. You know what I mean? I would imagine, after that playoff win, I'm sure some people donated some money in the pass the hat that the church does in a way that maybe they wouldn't have done the week prior.
Mac,
what if Pope Leo transferred the priests out of Pittsburgh?
Be pretty funny if that's the thing that gets a priest transferred.
He's a big Bears fan. I mean, but he might be. I think he's a bigger White Sox fan than he is a Bears fan, if we're being truthful about it. A lot of people are giving Pope Leo a lot of credit for what's happening with the Bears, like as much credit as Ben Johnson is getting. And if I'm Ben Johnson, there's got to be a part of him that finds that funny.
Just thinking the pantheon of things that haven't gotten people transferred to be like, hey, you're not taking your duty seriously because of the whole holy water into the end zone thing. That's where I draw the line.
I got to find out.
That's where you draw the line?
Was there holy water in the end zone? Did it exist? The only thing I saw pregame from yesterday.
Or did they do a two-week guarantee?
It doesn't last that long, I feel like.
A blessing.
I'm going to call the blessing. There's like an expiration date. It's like sand in an hourglass. It's only got so much life to it.
All right, this one's a 10-day one, but you might need the booster in 4 days.
That's probably what he told him. The priest was like, I did it. I did the blessing. It exists there now forever. And they're like, that's not how this works. Come on now, priest.
Come on. This is a ridiculous made-up thing that you're talking about.
The only thing I saw in the pregame was that guy that dressed up exactly like Aaron Rodgers with the helmet, that then Aaron Rodgers came over and had the weirdest exchange imaginable to.
Did that guy also have a made-up wife?
Maybe. I don't know. I haven't cross-examined the guy.
If you cosplay as Aaron Rodgers, you probably don't have a real
wife. And like Aaron tried like dapping him up, and it was really weird and awkward, and then they didn't know how to like end it, but Aaron stayed way too long, and the guy just like thought like Aaron would come over and be like, hey, that's awesome. And then Aaron wanted to have some conversation with him. It's like, have you ever been in that spot where you meet somebody that like clearly is like they're a very busy, very important person, and then you get there, and then you're like, I just wanted to do a hi, and that's it. Like, I didn't have any, like, convo prepared for that. We didn't really have to do a, you're busy, you can go now. And then Aaron just kept staying.
Did Aaron Rodgers?
He just kept hanging around the guy.
Like, hey, you think we really landed on the moon? Do you think he just went, like, vetted him like he does other quarterbacks?
You get one shot with Aaron Rodgers. What's your go-to?
Where's your wife?
Where's the wife?
Yeah, 100%.
Ayahuasca? Was Shailene Woodley actually that good in bed? I don't know.
Actually, I go...
Danica Patrick, what happened there?
Can we do ayahuasca together? And then as we're both coming down off the wask, as it's called, then I go, Aaron, your wife's fake, right? That way I get a twofer.
You instantly got him to be like, did I find my new best friend? And then being like, you're out of my circle now.
Well, no. Well, yeah,
that's
because I've used
that's
him.
The quickest entourage.
He's paid for my high. Now it's time to get my part of this.
This is after you do ayahuasca together?
Yeah.
Oh, it's after that.
Yeah, he takes me to Costa Rica. This is sounding very tawdry.
That seems like a gravy train, though. I would ride the Aaron Rodgers gravy train if he's taking you on trips.
Again, his wife is imaginary. You really got to think about how far you're willing to go to get a free trip to Costa Rica.
Imaginary wife taking men on drug trips with him. Where are we going with Aaron Rodgers now?
I think we know.
Where are we going with Aaron?
Where is Aaron Rodgers going, and are we going with him? A little news to pass along here. Ohio State tight end Max Clair leaving school early and entering the NFL draft. He's been projected between a second and third round pick. So another Buckeye declaring for the NFL draft. The lead in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.